Fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Great move to the right at the 50. Cuts back to the left at the 40. He's loose at the 30. He's at the 20, the 10. Touchdown, Cardinals!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Well, we could just pretend that we don't have an answer to the quarterback question. I'll let you guys continue to speculate. I know how much you thoroughly enjoyed the speculation process over the past few weeks, months.
I don't know what we were going to do on a podcast when we don't have that speculation.
I mean, I can break it. Don't make me do it, Darren. I'll break out the crystal football. You can look into it again and start naming names.
What about 2021? Who's going to be the quarterback?
That's right. Take your projections right there, Kyle. Let's hear it. Let's bring it. I want you to extrapolate into the future. I want you to go all pro football focus, violate the hashtag no math. We're not messing around here on Cardinals Underground. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Kyle Hodegaard. If you even thought about messing around, forget it. There's a quarterback. We're ready to ride. Let's go get it in gear.
There you go. Sam Bradford. Yes. Hey, we're excited. It's Friday. We're like 3 days late on when we normally record this because we're trying to get through the jungle that is free agency.
Darren, I'm going to need some energy out of you. I don't want you flopping across the finish line.
It's
here.
It's Friday. Okay?
This is the fourth quarter. I want you to finish strong. And, you know, Kyle, feed off Kyle's energy if you have to. Kyle, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Let's do this.
Okay. Young.
Okay, that might have been one of the funniest things I've ever seen right there.
young multimedia journalists out there, okay, please, don't. This is what happens when you spend too many years watching too many games and too many press boxes. This is what happens, all right? Let's get that enthusiasm back. Did you see the completion percentage for the last 2 years in which Sam Bradford actually played football? Do I have to cite week one on Monday night a year ago where he went 27-32, 346, three touchdowns, no interceptions, a passer rating of 143. That's right off my head because, you know, as John Madden used to say, if it's a worthwhile stat, you don't need to write it down.
Wow.
You remember
okay.
it.
Man.
Talk about the energy, number one. Number two, yeah, there's no question. You know, here's the thing, Paul. I mean, I think generally, for the most part, I haven't seen a whole lot of people questioning. Okay, they question Bradford's win-loss totals, which, quite frankly, when you're talking about spending the first 5 years of your career with a horrific Rams team.
I mean, they averaged three wins a year.
It was never going to be good. But I think generally people understand that Sam Bradford's been a pretty decent football player when he's played. The issue, again, is he's got to be able to play. He's got to be able to be on the field. You know, and we'll see how that goes. He talked a lot about how his knee feels good right now. I will give him credit. He's not saying he's fine. He's saying he feels good now. He's not committing to making a promise that he may not be able to keep, and we'll find out. But A, he passed the physical. Otherwise, he wouldn't be on this team, number one.
That's true.
And number two, you know, again, he feels like he got much better. He was backing up Case Keenum in the playoffs last year, so he was healthy enough that they felt like, you know, everybody wanted to talk about Teddy Bridgewater. Why didn't the Cardinals sign Teddy Bridgewater? You know, the Vikings felt strong enough about Sam Bradford and whatever knee issues that he had that they felt he was better served as being the backup in the playoffs. In the playoffs, again, one thing happens, Keenum's out of the game, who are you going to go to? They felt more it was better to have Bradford as that guy than Teddy Bridgewater. I think that says something.
And he was honest, and he was forthcoming during his press conference. And at one point, he said, look, my knee has had some issues. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's pretending it's perfect. It'll never be what it was. There's no way. Not when he had three knee injuries in that five-year span, all of which were season-ending. That's not the case. The question is, at 30 years of age, can he stay on the field? Because when he is on the field, Kyle, as we've already talked about, he's been very effective.
And that's why you gave him, from what the reports are, a one-year deal with a team option for a second year. So obviously you're not putting 5 years, you're not giving him the Kirk Cousins contract of 3 years with all this guaranteed money in it. It's a shorter deal where if he performs, the Cardinals are actually in a nice spot because it's up to their discretion whether they want that second year or not. And then, to me, obviously he's had the two ACL tears, which is a very big deal, but at least he's playing quarterback. And at least for a couple of seasons after that. He did play 14 and 15 games. He's not a skill guy. He's not playing defensive back. He's
like
a,
Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a much more legitimate concern when you're cutting more and doing things. He is a pocket passer who has dealt with knee injuries, and maybe if it is degenerative and it's something that's just going to bother him, maybe this won't work out. But I think there is an upside to it that a lot of fans don't want to hear right now. I do think that there is a way that this works out because he has shown recently that he can play in 14 and then 15 games.
And look, here's the other thing is, and I say this gently, but I don't expect him to get nearly as much as Carson Palmer just based on the fact it won't be the same offense.
Right.
That's they won't point. Allow it. And Bruce Arians, for everything he said, and we all love BA to death, but in the offseason going into 2017, he vowed that Carson Palmer would not be hit as much. And then what happened over the first five games? He got hit 50 times and sacked 19 times and both league highs. How much of that had to do with the personnel and how much of that had to do with play calling and 5 and 7 step drops?
You know, the other thing too is, again, we talk about Sam Bradford, and I think it's the injuries more than the kind of play that he can provide that really bothers people. You know, I was mentioning before we came on, it's amazing how many Vikings fans have jumped into my Twitter feed to, I don't know, be angry at Sam Bradford, make fun of him. I don't really understand why there's so much hatred for him in terms of the money. I think, and again, there is, though, and I think that's the other thing. It's the money that he signed for that is bothering a lot of fans. I get it. I understand that bothers you. And if you're a Cardinals fan, I understand why that would give you hesitation in terms of how much cap space it takes up compared to what some other things you do. But, you know, Kyle will be posting something on this soon. But Kyle did a little look into, you know, again, a guy who's getting a $15 million guaranteed. It might be more than that if he maybe hits some incentives or some things.
Blake Bortles is going to get 18.
Again, Kyle.
Yeah, there's very few guys with less guaranteed money among starting quarterbacks, even starting quarterbacks on rookie deals. And then you look at the $20 million figure, and I've read a lot of stuff that people are saying you couldn't keep Tyrann Mathieu because you gave Sam Bradford this money. But they're just completely separate entities, where Tyrann Mathieu is a safety and he was being paid as one of the highest safety, the one of the best safeties. I think he was number two in the NFL. And Sam Bradford at $20 million is still only number 17. And there's only 24 quarterbacks that are starting that are beyond their rookie deal. So he's 17 out of 24. So he's actually in like the bottom half, the bottom third of salaries for a starting quarterback. So it's really not that much money.
That's what it costs to pay a starting quarterback. Yeah. And people can get mad about that all they want. That's reality.
And there is the argument you could have paid AJ McCarron $6 million or Josh McCown $10 million. And I understand why people would want to do that, where you had more money to go after other areas. But Sam Bradford, in my opinion, gives you an upside and a ceiling much higher than a McCown or AJ McCarron because he's unproven. Sam Bradford was the number one overall pick. The Eagles traded for him. The Vikings gave up a first round pick for him. Obviously, a lot of people in the NFL believe in Sam Bradford when he's healthy, and I think the Cardinals do too.
McCarron is Kevin Cobb all over again. You don't know what you're getting with him.
That's apples and oranges, absolutely. I mean, not even nearly as proven as a Sam Bradford, not even close. And then when you talk to people who look at film for a living, they'll tell you about the arm talent that Sam Bradford has that AJ McCarron does not. It's not even close. You know, and look, Sam Bradford, for his part, he didn't get any long-term security. He got a one-year deal. And guess what? If you're the team, you're going to have to pay a little bit more to basically work on a one-year deal.
I'm just going to sit here and say $15 million is a lot of long-term security. I'm just saying that.
I'm just saying that, Paul. I'm talking about the most important position in sports.
You're right. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm saying.
I'm talking about pitchers who are going to make more than $30 million this year for a local baseball
team. I'm just saying that I don't think Sam Bradford's going to have to worry about money.
Relative to other quarterbacks, it has to be the asterisk in all this discussion.
And if he makes the full $20 million, that means he's hit every single incentive, right, guys? And that means he had a heck of a season.
Yeah.
And guess what? Guess what Carson Palmer made a year ago? $24 million, He only played 6.5 games.
Yeah. And again, without seeing the contract, I mean, even if that extra $5 million is just about playing 16 games, you're going to take that. If you pay him $20 million for 16 games, no one's going to complain.
Yeah, he'll probably outplay the contract if he plays every single game.
All right, well, speaking of the contract, he signed on the line that was dotted and then had this to say to EZCardinals.com.
Right now, my knee feels great. In my mind, it's really not an issue. I think everyone outside of this building is probably worried about it. You know, but having gone through the rehab process before, having gone through injuries before, you know, as a player, you really, you know, you can't focus on it.
And last month he went skiing. So let's hope he doesn't do any more of that. But since he got through it healthy, I think that's a pretty good sign. If the man was able to go skiing, then he has to be fairly decent.
And like Darren was saying, the fact that he was back in the playoffs and he was being the backup and they deemed him ready to go, maybe more so than Teddy Bridgewater, I think, like Darren was saying before, I think that says something about his health. And very easily one little thing could happen and it could be trouble. But as of now, everything looks like it's heading in the right direction.
It was 2013, 2014, where he missed almost entire seasons with the torn ACLs. He retoured in 14. Then last year, he played that first game, NFC Offensive Player of the Week in Week 1 on Monday night against the Saints. Midway through the game in Week 2, he went down and out. He tried to make a return in Week 5. Didn't happen. He didn't even make it to halftime. And then they made a move. And so, yes, it hasn't been a recurring theme. And he was asked, Sam Bradford, all right, how do you fight through that frustration?
It's frustrating. You know, there's been definitely some dark times. You know, you fight those battles mentally. But every time you go through that process and every time that you turn the corner and you're able to get yourself back on the field, you know, I feel like I've come back mentally tougher and mentally stronger than I was the time before.
And he didn't duck the questions. There were repeated questions. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, when he has been out on the field, and there's no doubt he's been mentally strong enough to get through that. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You guys remember, just like me, his first few years with the Rams, he was basically David Carr reincarnated.
Yes.
I mean, he was a crash test dummy. How his career isn't over like David Carr based on playing against behind the worst. He not only did he play behind the worst offensive line in the league for several years in a row in St. Louis, he did the same thing for Minnesota in 2016. The Vikings O-line was banged up and it was pitiful.
Yeah.
And he still managed to set an NFL league record for completion percentage, which Drew Brees topped last year.
Look, I understand the injury thing. I'd be curious to know. And again, you can't ignore it. It's number one. It's numero uno. I get that part. But this is a guy that's been on the Cardinals' radar from the time he came into the league. I mean, even when he was coming out for the draft, the Cardinals really liked him. Now, they knew they had no chance of getting him, and he was going to go number one. And the year that he came out in the draft in 2010, the Cardinals were coming off a division title. So you're clearly not going to get him. But, I mean, this is a guy that they think is very talented. Again, we're going to keep repeating all the same stuff. And the reality is if he gets hurt early and he is out in the first couple games and you're putting Mike Glennon, maybe who they just signed, if you're putting him out as your starter, people are going to be mad. And that's what people are upset about right now. And again, we're going to have to see. And as Kyle said, look, he got hurt last year, but the 2 years before that, he essentially played the whole season. I've got some
in
fans.
15 and 16.
Fans want to quibble with me. I said, somebody said, well, he hasn't played a full season since 2012. I'm like, he played 14 games this 1 year and 15 the next year. And then there was like, oh, well, that's not 16 games. I'm like, okay. If a guy misses one or two games, right. let's not start splitting hairs. If he plays 14 or 15 games, I think the Cardinals are going to get exactly what they want out of him.
If you believe what he said he had other offers. Now, he didn't elaborate on that, but he chose the Cardinals. As to why, well, a couple of weapons. Actually, three he cited on offense in particular.
I think you look at Fitz and you look at David. You know, obviously I played with Jermaine. There's some pieces on the offense, you know, some playmakers. You know, you look at those three guys right there. You know, it's easy to see, you know, as a quarterback, people that you can get the ball to who can make plays.
And he goes way back with Jermaine Gresham, doesn't he, Kyle?
Yeah, which I couldn't have figured out at the press conference.
No. Tell the little story. We're on a podcast. That's what we're here for.
Go ahead.
Tell him what you told me right after.
Yeah, he said, I mean, that quote exactly. And he says Jermaine, and I'm going, all right, Sam Bradford was on the Rams. I know Jermaine Gresham was never on the Rams. Were they together in Philly for a year or something? I'm like, I know Jermaine just came from Cincy.
You didn't remember Oklahoma.
I was racking my brain.
Okay.
And then I finally I knew they were teammates at Oklahoma. I was just so NFL-centric in that moment in my mind that I couldn't figure out. And then I started thinking, Is he talking about a Jimmy Germain on this team? Is there a
Really good about that stuff usually too.
Is there a backup guard named Germain?
Well, you know, someone told me, and I really didn't have the guts to ask it in front of everyone at the press conference. It would have sidetracked things. But if you guys get a chance, I think Gresham and Sam Bradford go all the way back to youth league sports.
Oh, really?
And in Oklahoma. And I think they were like basketball teammates and all this kind of stuff as kids. So they have a long friendship on that one. And as for Larry, I mean, I was actually surprised that he sort of deemed Larry a singular receiver in his career. And like Kyle, I started racking my brain. I'm thinking, has he really thrown any? Well, here's what he had to say about number 11.
You know, as a quarterback, to play with a guy like that, I mean, I've never played with a guy like that before. I've played with some good receivers, but you know, when you talk about Fitz, I think he's in a class that very few guys are in. To be a part of that and to get to play with him, it's probably one of the best opportunities of my career.
Now, are we sure he didn't slander Nelson Aguilar right there? I mean, come on. I can't believe that.
Well, I mean, honestly, the Vikings receiving core a couple years ago with Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen was pretty good, but not quite Fitz level.
But see, here's the thing. The thing about that whole thing is, like, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald's about to be number two all time in yardage. And right. I mean, you can basically say that and be right about almost
everybody. Unless you play with Jerry Rice.
That's true.
without offending anybody. Now, obviously, you know, you can play with some pretty good guys, but I mean, and I agree. I think Thielen's turn, but I mean, nobody's putting Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs in Fitz's category. Not even close.
Yeah. All right, now what about Mike McCoy, the offensive coordinator? And I'll be honest with you, I think McCoy, more than anyone, has just been itching. Name me a quarterback. I need to formulate an offense. He finally gets his guy in Sam Bradford, and you know, they're going to have to learn each other, there's no doubt about it, and then figure out a system.
I think he has a vision for how he sees this offense kind of growing in the spring, but you know, I think it's going to be a process, and I think it's going to be, let's figure out what we're good at. Let's figure out how this personnel here fits what he's done in the past. Figure out how we can use guys, you know, to really use their strengths to our advantage. And, you know, I think having someone like that who is open-minded, you know, I think that's the right way to do it.
All right, so I talked to one guy who evaluates NFL film for a living. He said, think Kyle Orton, think Philip Rivers, two quarterbacks that Mike McCoy had once upon a time, and Sam Bradford will be a similar type weapon in a similar type offense.
And I think you look at the personnel that the Cardinals have, and I think Sam Bradford does make sense if you're saying David Johnson is your best player and Larry Fitzgerald is your top receiving option. The fact that Larry Fitzgerald is a more intermediate runner at this point in his career, and David Johnson is obviously coming out of the backfield and doing stuff, but it's something where Sam Bradford is very accurate and can get the ball out pretty quickly. And I think it's something that fits well with something that maybe this offensive coordinator and Mike McCoy will do, rather than, like you were saying, the Bruce Arians, chuck it deep, seven-step drops without any tight end chipping. You know, you're going five offensive linemen that are fending for themselves. So I think this move makes sense for what Mike McCoy has done in the past.
It looked like you wanted to disagree on that one, the whole Kyle Orton, Philip Rivers.
Well, it was just, I mean, first of all, to me, Kyle Orton and Philip Rivers, that's a pretty big – I mean, I guess if you're talking about the kind of quarterback or the kind of offense,
that's what it was.
That makes
style,
a little
yeah.
bit more. Because, like, there's a big difference between Phillip Rivers and Kyle Orton. Although
right.
Kyle Orton did put up some decent numbers with Mike McCoy.
Did.
He did.
Absolutely
and,
did.
And again, I think all this comes back to, you know, and talking about, I think the Cardinals are fine a quarterback if Sam Bradford's on the field. The question is going to be, can he stay on the field?
Okay. And look. They lost David Johnson, everybody now, knock on wood, in week one of last year. You never know what's going to happen with
right.
injuries, but getting David Johnson back feels like you just got the biggest steal in free agency, and it's a big reason why Sam Bradford did sign with the Cardinals.
Having a guy that can do everything that he can, you know, both in the run game and in the pass game, to be able to create mismatch and use him in a variety of ways, kind of as a chess piece, as a way to attack the defense and create explosive plays, you know, both in the run and in the pass, and then obviously they've got to respect him in the play-action game as well.
All right, here's what I'm looking forward to already. You guys ready for this? He, with his supreme accuracy, hitting David Johnson in stride, just get the ball. Not only get the ball to him, get it to him in stride where he doesn't break stride. He can turn the corner, maybe on a crossing pattern, whatever. Hit him on a quick hitter out of the backfield, and he makes a guy miss in space. That's what I want to see already.
And really, as much as Carson Palmer did throw it deep a lot, definitely in 2016, the latter half of that year when David Johnson became the focal point of the offense, you could tell that Carson Palmer really became comfortable with just get the ball to David Johnson and let him do his thing. And once they figured that out, I think the offense really made strides that year. Obviously, we don't know what would have happened last year because David got hurt so early. But yeah, I think that's a huge thing is you have this guy that you can dump it off to and he's going to make plays. And that alone puts a lot of stress on the defense, which should open up other things. But it's such a nice emergency outlet to always have.
Is it just me or did David Johnson look a little motivated watching the combine and tweeting about Saquon Barkley? That all the numbers Barkley put up and all the praise and props, and rightfully so, that the rookie out of Penn State got. David Johnson's like, hey, wait a minute, because there were some comps and there were some comparisons, but then a lot of numbers were just slightly better than David Johnson. It seemed like it motivated him a little.
Well, I mean, to me, David Johnson's got a lot of motivation going on. It'll be interesting to see what happens this offseason. Because he is eligible for a contract extension. He is going into the last year of his contract. I do believe that's a very important thing for David Johnson to get an extension. But as we all know, right now, the running back market is terrible. Teams still feel, no matter how much success a David Johnson or a Le'Veon Bell or whomever are having, teams are still not looking to pay running backs a ton of money. Le'Veon Bell is going to have to be on a franchise tag because he can't come to a deal. And beyond that, I think I saw something after a couple guys got cut and that right now there's, I think Le'Veon Bell and is there anybody else making more than like $5 million a year as a running back?
Really? There's a huge gap like that?
Freeman's
it's interesting.
Got decent
yeah, Devontae Freeman. But there's only like a couple, three guys and most of the running backs. And this is a good running back class.
Draft is loaded.
A lot of people have talked about, you know, as great as Barkley might be, you know, these teams at the top of the draft would probably be stupid to take him when they could get maybe a Sony Michel or somebody like early in the second round or whatever it might be. And again, this is all what's playing into David Johnson's head. Plus, he's coming off a major injury, and as good as he was 2 years ago, he didn't do that this past year. So he's got a lot of motivation to show he can do some things too.
I think the thing that helps him is he's such a great receiver. Yes. Where even Steve Keim was saying it at the combine, he loves versatility. All these guys love versatility now, where they can catch the ball, because that's half the battle as a running back these days is being able to go out of the backfield or even split out and run wide receiver routes, because that puts so much stress on a defense. And the fact that he can do that, and the fact that his season-ending injury last year was his wrist and it wasn't something with his legs, I think really helps him. So it sure seems like if David Johnson is what he showed his second year, even though, like you said, the running back market is depressed, I still think he's going to get a pretty good chunk of money.
Well, you heard what Sam Bradford said when asked about David Johnson. He said, hashtag matchup problem. That's the first thing they cite. Just, yeah, you know, his ability, you know, are you going to put a linebacker on him? Can you get away with his safety on him at times? I mean, he's made a lot of guys look stupid who don't cover for a living. There's no doubt about it. And I know one other question along with a contract question that David Johnson is going to field, right? There's no doubt that Sam Bradford is going to continue to get the comparisons to Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer. And here's what he had to say.
Those two guys were tremendous players, and you know, they were both able to accomplish a lot here in Arizona. I've battled some injuries, but you know, hopefully been able to turn the corner, and this is a place where I can be for the rest of my career, you know, and hopefully I can do some things that those guys were able to do.
Are you already planning the oral history on azcardinals.com, Darren? And Kurt Warner, Carson Palmer, and Sam Bradford, I can see already.
I will say this. The parallels are pretty amazing. Now, I will say that Sam Bradford has had probably the least amount of total success out of any of those guys. I mean, you know, Kurt Warner had two MVPs under his belt by the time all that happened, and Carson Palmer still was a very good quarterback who had made, you know, the postseason and stuff like that. And Sam Bradford has struggled a lot more than that, and with less of a resume. And quite frankly, his injuries have been a lot more serious.
Yep.
So there are differences, but you're talking about a guy who, all these guys, you're talking about taking somebody who had already had some success and injuries had made everybody question whether they had anything left, and they showed up here, and they had something to prove. And obviously, Warner proved a lot. Palmer proved a lot. Took Warner a little bit of time to do that. And it took a number one draft pick for him to get a, you know, to really show, oh, wait a minute, maybe he is still the guy. But, I mean, it could happen. It could still happen. I still think very much that this team is going to be looking for that number one draft pick like they did when they signed Kurt Warner.
But, you know, if you rewind 5 years ago, I mean, to be fair, and I'm throwing myself under the bus here as much as anyone, when the Cardinals traded with the Raiders and gave up what would have been a sixth or seventh round pick at the time, absolutely nobody was screaming, oh, that's a steal. That's highway robbery from the Raiders. What were they thinking? That did not happen. We didn't have any of these, which is a sort of the same climate we're experiencing right now. Some people are underwhelmed by Sam Bradford just based on he's coming off injury.
And that's what I appreciate about Steve Keim is he very rarely goes in and pays top dollar for somebody who's tapped out with their potential. I mean, he paid pennies on the dollar for Carson Palmer, and that turned out great. And this one, he didn't give up any assets for Sam Bradford besides money. So instead of trading for somebody and giving up a draft pick, you know, he paid Sam Bradford a deal that is less than most starting quarterbacks. And it's something where if it doesn't work out, he can get out of it very easily. Like Darren's saying, if they draft a guy and that guy's your franchise guy, you can easily just turn the keys over to the young kid, and that's that. But if Sam Bradford does hit, you know you have him for 2 years, and if he plays well and avoids the injuries, then you can extend him and keep rolling like that. But I like that he has contingency plans in place, but also he's going for guys that always have a high ceiling.
Well, if you take last year's team and you put Sam Bradford under center, once again, we're saying for the entire season as opposed to more than half the season with a Blaine Gabbert and Drew Stanton, where do the Cardinals end up in the win-loss column? That's what's intriguing because yep. You have a lot of the same personnel coming back, and that's Sam Bradford. That's not us.
The defense has been really good for quite a while here. I think anytime you can play behind a defense like that, you know, where you're not going to have to score 50 points a game to win, you know, I think that's obviously a big positive.
And he mentioned how he went through the Cardinals locker room and he saw some of the nameplates in the locker, said, wow, that guy's a good player and that guy's a good player. And, you know, there's definitely some talent on this roster. But speaking of defense, one name he did not see up in the Cardinals locker room, Tyrann Mathieu. And, you know, just give us your thoughts. Darren, you knew him as well as anyone.
I would say, and I wrote a lot about this earlier in the week, you know, first of all, this is not something that it's a surprise. We've talked about it before. We knew it was a possibility. They were going to look at his contract. They asked him to take a pay cut. He decided not to. If you believe the reports that are out there, they were willing to pay him. I think he was supposed to make about $11 million this year, and supposedly they actually offered him $9 million when it was all said and done. They came up and said $9 million, and he decided he'd rather be on the open market, and they had to release him. And, you know, he wasn't going to play under that contract. He played solid last year. He didn't play like he did in 2015, which is what that contract was based on. And that's ultimately the reality of all of this is the contract that he got, that he signed in 2016, training camp of 2016, was based on the Tyrann Mathieu that played 2015. And he was not able to get back to that level in the 2 years since. He may or may not be able to get back there. You know, I think he's confident he's going to be able to get back there, and we will all see. But the Cardinals couldn't afford to give him a bunch of guaranteed money over the next 2 years and have it not work out that way. And that's kind of where it ended.
Yeah, I mean, he finished strong the last 4 to 6 games. He finished strong. If you talk to the coaches, they were impressed, but his 2017 game film was not 2015. He did not impact or affect the game in the same way. And honestly, there were times when the defense would target him, especially on third down when he was in man coverage and slot, and the Cardinals had to compensate for that at times.
I mean, he was one of the most versatile defenders in the NFL with the way he can blitz and the way he plays against the run. But like you said, if in 2015 he was amazing in coverage, and the fact that he could guard slot receivers that well, and you had Patrick Peterson doing well on the outside, it made it so hard for offenses. Even if he was just mediocre or a little bit below average in the slot in coverage, like you said, it's hard because then teams can target that or it's an option for them. And, you know, if he wasn't getting paid $14 million salary cap hit, it's not a big deal because he's still overall a good player. But when you're allocating that much money, you have to be a star. And I think what Darren was saying, too, when you're talking about 2 years of guaranteed money, that's a lot of money to tie up at $14 million for a safety. You needed to be an All-Pro, and at this point he hadn't been, so I understand why the Cardinals did it.
And let's make this very clear, which, you know, I don't know if everybody really understands. Again, even if you're asking him to take a pay cut, if you're willing to pay him, let's say, $9 million, they still wanted him. They wanted him on this roster. You know, obviously not at the higher level, but this was not a case of, hey, we just need to move on from this guy. That was not the thought process.
And they negotiated. It wasn't an automatic. They just released him, non-starter.
And they wanted to keep him. I think they're disappointed he's not here. And it'll be interesting to see where all this goes. The other point I want to make to this is, at the combine, Steve Keim, when he was asked about Tyrann Mathieu being on the roster, said, and I'm paraphrasing now, but he basically said, we're looking at not just Tyrann, but all the players. We're looking at not only how they fit in scheme, but also where they fit in the salary cap. Now, my initial thought was, okay, he's putting a lot out there to kind of make it a little bit lower down the totem pole that, hey, salary cap, because that's kind of what this is all about. But now that I look back on it, I really truly believe that there was a lot to the scheme part of it, and it all works together. And, you know, we don't know exactly how, you know, all these guys are going to fit in this scheme and how they're going to use them. And I'm not saying that they got rid of him because he was going to be a non-factor in this defense, because you wouldn't pay a non-factor $9 million. That makes no sense. But I do think that's part of it, where, like, okay, if we have to move on, how does that fit? And I think that's part of this.
I mean, how many times did Todd Bowles and James Betcher go a six and sometimes seven DBs and at times four safeties? I mean, right. They would have these speed packages out there. I mean, Tony Jefferson got paid based on that. And I just don't anticipate that's going to be the same sort of personnel group that you're going to see very often in this Al Holcomb and Steve Wilks defense. It just isn't. So to Darren's point, I think there was an absolute ceiling that was lower than before for the position itself. And here's the other thing why I'm surprised Tyrann Mathieu didn't take the deal, the $9 million, if indeed that was offered, is because Tyrann Mathieu knew better than anyone he wasn't the Badger. How many times, guys, do we stand in front of Tyrann Mathieu's locker and some media pencil neck like yours truly, geez, do you think you're the Badger again now? They would ask him this all, especially like after Indianapolis, he makes the game-saving pick in overtime. And, I mean, it just, he never once is said, I'm back. You could see it in his face that he knew he was not the same caliber player.
Yeah, and I think it was clear. He has admitted that in 2017 he did not play at the level he did in 2015. But on the flip side, he's 25 years old. He has an All-Pro season to his record already. I mean, he's got this pedigree where when you do open it up to 32 teams and people start bidding on you, I mean, there's a lot higher chance of getting some decent money. But like you said, sometimes the market is soft and people may have watched the film and wondered if he can get back to that spot. So I think in Tyrann's mind, I'm 25 and I am going to get back and be the Badger. So to reach free agency and have a chance to do it and to prove himself, I think that was maybe something that interested in him. And I think the proof will be in the pudding. I mean, 2018 is a very important year for his career because he's young enough to do it. I mean, physically, he hasn't peaked yet, but when you have a pretty serious ACL surgery on both knees, you have to wonder if he can get back to that form.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, as we record this right now, the free agent safety pool is huge right now. So he's not only looking to get a deal somewhere, but there's some pretty good safeties out there. And I'm not saying he's not better than most of them. He may be, but there are other safety choices for teams that want to sign safety. So it's going to be interesting. And just to put a bow on this and to not be super negative, because I don't want to be super negative.
All love Tyrann Mathieu. There's no doubt about it.
That guy was, number one, he was an amazing player. When he was at his peak, there was nobody that I would rather watch.
I couldn't take my eyes off the guy. I would have, from the sideline, I would have half an eye on Tyrann Mathieu and the rest on the entire game.
And the other part, too, and this is where the three of us are going to appreciate this more, and not trying to drop names or anything, but I mean, I know as a reporter, I have rarely found there have been lots of guys who have been good interviews over the years, and good guys and good interviews. There was a genuineness to Tyrann Mathieu that is not apparent in a lot of guys, even good guys that give good interviews. He was introspective. He talked about stuff that most guys would probably rather not, and he did it openly. I mean, I did a story. I'm not just talking to him about getting busted at LSU for the marijuana and getting kicked out of school and spending a night in jail, which in itself, you wondered if he was going to want to do that. I went back to New Orleans a couple years ago. He had said some things after Will Smith was murdered about his hometown city and how dangerous it is. And I went back there and he opened up about how he didn't always feel comfortable there. And it's a dangerous place. And he said some very open things. And again, that's him. But I mean, he was a great guy to talk to. I really liked him. I wish him nothing but the best. And I hope he gets back. I mean, it would look kind of ugly for the Cardinals if he gets back to 2015 Honey Badger, but I hope he does.
It's going to be fascinating. Before games, he would sort of have this routine. He would yell it at the cameras a lot, and he would say, "What's wrong with a challenge? Ain't nothing wrong with a challenge. Let's go meet that challenge." And it's going to be fascinating to watch and see if he does indeed meet this challenge to try and become the Badger again. And
he's going to try.
And you know, on the Big Red Rage, to your point about stuff off, and especially about New Orleans, when he got into conversations about Katrina and how it impacted
him and his
family, I mean, spellbinding. There wasn't you could hear a pin drop when he started telling those stories about Katrina and everything he had been through. And for all that and more, and the fact that he met the media after win or lose, didn't matter what the situation was, he never ducked the cameras or the microphones. So Tyrann Mathieu, where he's going to end up, we'll find out. Maybe with James Betcher or Todd Bowles. We do know that the Cardinals signed a few other names. Kyle, Andre Smith, former number 6 pick overall, right out of Alabama, longtime Cincinnati Bengals tackle.
Yeah, and he's in his 30s now, so he's past his physical peak. But I think from what I've read, he's a pretty good run blocker, and that's something that certainly seems like a big emphasis with this new team. Steve Wilks has said it multiple times that he wants to run the ball, and obviously when you have David Johnson to do that, if you can get the offensive line going, that's a big part of keeping Sam Bradford upright too, is just being able to run the ball, making sure the defense just can't tee off on a guy like that. So I'm sure that'll be a big emphasis. That's one of the main reasons why I'm guessing that they went after Andre Smith, but it is something where they want to definitely establish that.
I'm curious to know how this offensive line is going to shake out. You know, there's been multiple reports that they've obviously talked to Justin Pugh, who would probably be a guard here if he signed.
Probably be right guard because Mike Iupati is going to be back at left guard.
And Mike Iupati, you know, worked out his contract, took a little bit of a pay cut to stick around. You know, I'll be curious to know exactly what happens with Jared Valdir now that they've got, you know, Andre Smith probably for right tackle. But this is something that they've needed to look at. And they're going to try and, you know, the one thing, and we talked about this, is Steve Keim talked about the durability to me before the combine and mentioned how important that is. And you're all talking about, like, you know, Andre Smith missed a couple games because of injury, and you're still talking about DJ Humphreys coming back from a knee injury, and Iupati missed all of last season with an injury, and even Justin Pugh missed some time with back issues, didn't have to have any surgery, but had some back issues. So if he showed up here, so I mean, all these things are things that, you know, you got to look at, but there definitely feels like there's a certain roll of the dice, but those are the guys that are available, and that's usually why they're available, is because the really good offensive linemen that are healthy all the time are under contract.
The hidden need, I think, on this roster is Mike linebacker. And Josh Bynes was signed to a 3-year deal, and then they claimed off waivers Jeremy Cash from the Browns roster. And so, you know, we presume Carlos Dansby is not going to be back. I also presume that you're not going to go ahead and put Dayon Buchanan and Hassan Reddick at Mike, strong side inside linebacker. So I think both those guys they just signed are going to be in play at that spot, I presume.
Is that under assumption you're going to a 4-3?
Well, yeah, although talking with Larry Foote, it's going to be fluid, they're going to use a whole bunch of different things. I'm not sure it's going to fall under one or the other.
If you have only two inside backers, to me it'd be hard to not have Damon Buchanan and Hassan Reddick out there together. I mean, Josh Bynes obviously played really well last year, and I think he's very smart and definitely a very useful piece, but just looking at the overall athleticism of those two guys, and obviously if you have three linebackers that are like that, it all makes sense and they can all play. I'm interested to see how all that's going to work out, because if Josh Bynes is playing and you only have two, then obviously one of those other guys is in a rotation or watching a lot of the time. So I think in dime looks and nickel, those guys will be on the field, but base defense is kind of up in the air.
Well, and I will say the other thing as we talk about base defense and what's going to happen and what exactly you're going to do. I mean, we're also talking about it. If you're going to go to a 4-3 base, you're going to probably be looking for some. You're going to need some defensive linemen at some point.
And with that in mind, I was surprised to see Josh Morrow got released. So I don't know what exactly that meant in terms of the cap and the contract.
2.8. They saved 2.8 on the cap.
I got you. That's more than I thought, actually.
Yeah, which is probably part of the problem is, you know, you. It's always nice to have these extensions, and Josh Morrow signed that extension last year. But it puts a target on your back, not only because of the money, but also because when you get a new coach in here, you don't know how they're looking at everybody. And you know, the first thing I thought of was how much Brenston Buckner liked Josh Morrow.
Yep.
And then you start wondering, okay, is that one of the reasons he was around? Because that coaching staff liked him particularly for some of the things he did, and this coaching staff doesn't see that same fit.
And if you are a 4-3 and you're looking at Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones on the edges, they're going to play so much of the time that is Josh Morrow a little bit too duplicative of those guys, and is he too small to go inside? So maybe it is a scheme thing, which I'm still waiting to see how all that's going to shake out. Yeah. But obviously a Corey Peters is bigger, and Olsen Pierre and Robert Kimdichi are kind of defensive tackle type players. Was Josh Morrow kind of a tweener in a 4-3? So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with all that.
Well, if Jared Valdir is on this roster, maybe Alex Boone, they can look eye to eye with their backup quarterback, Mike Glennon. So a 2-year deal for Mike Glennon, who somebody, you know, if they're going to start playing locker room basketball again, you know, Glennon, he's I'm sure he'll do pretty well.
And everybody, you know, watched him not perform very well in Chicago, but I think it's another thing where Steve Keim isn't going to pay a premium for a guy like that. But 1 year later, he got $45 million contract last year, which he didn't get most of it because he got cut. But now you're paying him a reported $4 million. So I like Steve Keim's philosophy of finding guys that are maybe a year before or a year after they're supposed to do something. And then he also has a good pickup basketball player.
The problem is a lot of fans see all these guys and they don't want to pay them more than the minimum because they're upset with how they've seen them play in the past. And right. It just doesn't work that way. Yeah. A backup quarterback is going to cost you $3 or $4 million. Drew Stanton was going to cost you $4 or $5 million if you brought him back. Now, you can argue whether you'd rather have Drew Stanton than Mike Glennon, but Mike Glennon's younger and you don't know exactly what's going to happen. And again, we don't know what the analysis is from these new coaches when it comes to what free agents were out there compared to what free agents the Cardinals had already on the roster. And again, I look at Drew Stanton, and I love Drew, and I wouldn't have mind seeing Drew Stanton come back. But Drew Stanton was here in large part because Bruce Arians wanted him here, and Bruce Arians isn't here anymore. And so now the coaches tend to want to go in a different direction. That's just reality.
And I just think you keep buying lottery tickets for cheap at quarterback, and they've done that a lot. They've cycled through a lot of backup quarterbacks, obviously haven't hit on any of them, but I don't see a big harm in bringing in Mike Glennon, seeing if you can find something similarly to a Blaine Gabbert and a Matt Barkley and all these guys that they've brought in, seeing if they can get something to click. And if it doesn't, no real harm done. But if you can find somebody like the Vikings did with Case Keenum, who was at $2 million and you had a great setup for Minnesota, if you can do something like that, you're in a really good spot.
I just don't want to stand next to him on camera. That's all I have to say about that.
That's pretty much everybody, isn't it, Paul?
And so then, as I move it along with one final thought here, you know, I mean, I think he'll be good in the quarterback room, him, Sam Bradford, and then what will eventually be Josh Rosen.
Is that your prediction?
That'll be the
so
three
we bring
guys
a full circle
room.
About we're going to get back to the speculation now.
Yeah.
It's just about the draft.
Yeah. It's draft time, Paul.
I can't let this go without breaking out the crystal football and just telling you how Josh Rosen, I believe, will be the Arizona Cardinals rookie quarterback 2018. That's my guess.
But your idea for the starting quarterback was something way out of left field, and it was basically the guy that
Please
everybody
tell me you don't remember.
It was basically the guy that everybody figured in Sam Bradford.
Was I on the record with Sam Bradford? Was I? Is that what you're saying?
I just felt like it was pretty. A lot of people connected the dots and thought that would make sense here.
That's right. That's right. Because I was the one thinking it
would
come out of left
field. No,
you're
thinking left field.
That's right.
That's
right. You wanted Andy Dalton.
Well, okay. Now wait a minute. We don't know what exactly happened in that war room and how they ended up with Sam Bradford. What else was potentially possible?
That trade fell through at the last minute.
That's right. That's right. I'm holding to that. I think the league nixed it. Roger Goodell stepped in. He pulled like an David
we
Stern.
We can't have Calvisi be right.
Yeah, it he heard the podcast.
Yeah, it wasn't in the best interest of the league. He nixed it. Something like that. I'll get it. I'll get you that.
You couldn't let your ego get too big by getting
Oh, look at this. We're out of time. That'll do it for Cardinals Underground.